Satellites show more energy is staying on Earth instead of bouncing back into space. The sun did not change. So why were the last 2 years significantly hotter than any recorded before? For scientists, it became a race to find the cause. Now we have a confident answer based not on theories or models, but on raw observations. Blame the clouds. George Seliotis is a research physical scientist at NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies. He came through physics to meteorology and entered the early days of climate science. Well, recently he crunched 40 years of satellite records with his team, and they were analyzing the cloud cover on Earth. They found the world's storm zones are contracting. The land and sea may be getting less shade, leading to record heating. This is breaking knowledge we need. From New York, George Seliotis, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
Does your research suggest changes in cloud cover warm the Earth more than human-made gases?
It's hard to say that it's more than greenhouse gases. Clouds are a feedback to the warming, meaning that greenhouse gases are a forcing. In other words, we emit more greenhouse gases and we force the atmosphere. Now, once the atmosphere is forced, it responds. And one of the responses is by making more or less clouds, or making more clouds of one kind and fewer clouds of another kind. So clouds are a response to the forcing. That's why we call them feedbacks. Now, how big or how strong is this cloud feedback is something that we haven't really confidently resolved yet. It may be that the cloud feedback in itself can be even bigger than the forcing at some points, but I cannot say at this point that we're confident that we know the value of the cloud feedback to the extent that we can judge whether it's larger or smaller than the forcing. Overall, it appears to be smaller than the forcing because clouds warm and cool the climate at the same time. They reflect sunlight and they cool the climate, but they also trap heat and they warm the climate. So when we add all the cloud effects together, it turns out that the feedback is relatively small, or at least our best estimate for the feedback. Again, we're not confident about this feedback number yet, so I cannot really give a definitive answer to that question.
Fair enough. Well, you obviously know former NASA scientist James Hansen. His team pointed to sulfur reductions in ship emissions as a probable cause of the recent spike in warming and the Earth energy imbalance. They found fewer clouds over shipping lanes in the Pacific. Is that enough to explain the extra energy? Are these the cloud changes that you covered in your two recent papers?
Well, the changes in shipping emissions is definitely one of the reasons for the recent increases in the amount of absorbed solar radiation at the Earth's surface. However, the changes in shipping emission regulations were imposed basically from 2020 on, so the effects are over the last 4 or 5 years, the effects that we're seeing from those new regulations. I mean, there were some regulations starting in 2015, but we believe that the main regulations really that had a real effect are the ones that started in 2020. The changes that I am showing in the last two papers, basically the last 40 years, so this reduction in the world's storm cloud zones is something that we observe in satellite observations of the last 40 years. So whatever is happening with the shipping emissions is in addition to this background of changes that is in response to the reduction of these storm cloud zones. So the two are not the same thing. One is a smaller, probably smaller effect, but much longer term, much more longer term. The other is a much more recent effect and may well be more intense overall.
You know, clouds and cloud study are super complex. There were several times when I just had to sort of walk away from your paper and then come back to it because it requires a lot of learning just to get there. But why don't we break it down a little bit? We could start with the zones of the atmosphere where your group found significant cloud change. Closest to the equator, what is this intertropical convergence zone in the atmosphere? What goes on there?
The intertropical convergence zone is a zone that basically circles the globe near the equator. It's a zone of very thick rainy clouds. It's a very wet with thick raining clouds. It's called a convergence zone because at the surface there's a convergence of the surface winds that favors the lifting of the moisture from the surface and therefore favors the formation of the very thick storm clouds in that region. So the intertropical convergence zone is this zone where the atmosphere is converging at the surface, is lifting up the moisture, and is producing very thick, very reflective, and very hard-raining clouds.
And you found some changes in the clouds in this intertropical convergence zone, or we could call it ITCZ. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, what we find when we look at the satellite observations is a narrowing of this intertropical convergence zone. Basically, this zone is becoming more narrow. Now, we're not the first ones to find this narrowing of the ITCZ. There have been studies in the past, in the last 10 years, that have looked at precipitation rather than clouds, because you can also see this intertropical convergence zone in precipitation observations, since that's a very hard-raining region. And they also found this narrowing of the intertropical convergence zone. Also, there have been modeling studies that find a similar narrowing of that zone with climate warming. So we have a reason to suspect that the narrowing of the zone is in response to climate warming.
All right, let's move to the zone closer to many of our listeners, called the mid-latitude storm zones in your study. For example, what countries are we talking about, and are some of those places experiencing changed storm tracks even now?
Well, there are three basic storm track regions, mid-latitude storm track regions. There's the North Atlantic storm track region, there's the North Pacific storm track region, and then there's the Southern Ocean one. Now, those storm track regions are better defined and more easy to observe from satellites over oceans. At the same time, however, the Pacific storm track region is the one that really enters the U.S. from the west coast and is the one that affects the parts of the weather in the western part of the region. Now, once it crosses the mountains, there is the mountain barrier effect, but then the storms reform again near the eastern coast, and then they form the North Atlantic storm track, which starts from northeast U.S. and crosses the Atlantic and then enters northern Europe and the British Isles, and it's the storms that are affecting Europe are basically coming from this branch of the storm tracks. So both the U.S., Europe, and Asia are affected, northern Asia are affected by these storm tracks, the North Pacific and the North Atlantic storm tracks. The Southern Ocean storm track is really a more regular one because there aren't as many land areas, so it circumnavigates the globe, mostly over ocean, somewhere in between the Antarctic and the tips of Africa and South America, but it's mostly an oceanic storm zone. It's affecting Australia and New Zealand and the southern parts of South America, but it's mostly an oceanic storm track.
And you found some cloud changes are cooling the world at the same time, and so that brings up the key question, how does the reduced cloud heating and increased cloud cooling, how does that all balance out?
What we find when we do an analysis of the cloud changes over the past 40 years in the satellite observations is that at lower latitudes, say between 40 south and 40 north, basically we have a reduction in the cloud cover, which of course means more sunlight coming in, less reflection of the clouds, so more warming. However, if you move to higher latitudes, poleward of 40 or 50 degrees, in both hemispheres, generally, in most data sets, we find an increase in cloud cover. Some data sets show no change, basically a near zero change. Some others show an increase in cloud cover, which would imply basically an opposite effect. More clouds is more reflection, and in some sense, it's a cooling effect.
So if regional changes in cloud cover can create very different effects, some places heating, some places cooling, does that amplify differences in the climate and, I guess, the weather down below experienced in different parts of the world?
Yes, that's definitely the case. And the other thing that it does is it either increases or decreases the differences between the climate of different regions. And atmospheric circulation is basically driven by differences in temperature, not by the temperature itself. So when we have cold air in one place and warm air in another, that's when atmospheric circulation cells are forming, wanting to move the cold air towards the hot air region. So changes like that, differences in changes between regions, doesn't just change the climate of the regions themselves in a different way, it also changes the flow of the atmosphere between those regions.
And we should be clear, your latest report is based on observations, pretty reliable since the year 2000 from satellites, and this is not a theory, but the paper stops at 2023 without predicting future developments in clouds, and for that we might need to run a big climate model that includes cloud feedbacks and Earth energy balance. Has that modeling been done, George?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's several models that have been run. These are all the models that we use to predict future climate. So what we're in the process of doing right now is testing to see how well the models are simulating the current climate changes. And then we're going to, once we know the level of confidence that we have in the models, we're going to see how those changes evolve in the future and, of course, put more credence in the better behaving models or the more skillful models in order to get some conclusions on how these cloud changes will evolve in the future.
Wow. I mean, think back to ancient Greece, and now here we are talking about possibly knowing the future of clouds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Aristotle would be very happy.
Yeah. So we've been talking about changes in cloud cover that increase warming, but does that warming also change cloud cover? I mean, is this a feedback relationship we're discussing?
Yes, by all means. That's what makes it complicated, because the two are feeding on each other. Clouds are affecting the radiation, which affects the warming, and then this warming affects evaporation, which affects water transports, vertical and horizontal water transports, which are forming the clouds. And it's all a fairly complicated feedback loop, and this is what makes it hard to understand and hard to quantify.
In 2019, NASA's Tapio Schneider suggested there was a tipping point in cloud formation, especially the tropical stratocumulus decks of low cloud that helped cool the tropics. The amount of CO2 for that tipping point was unknown, but much higher than today, maybe above 1,200 parts per million CO2. But what if we are not dealing with a tipping point per se, but a progression, which your new paper is bringing to light?
Yeah, I believe the use of the term tipping point is a little, we use it a lot in science to describe something that takes us into a different equilibrium state. However, we always reach tipping points in a progression, in a slow movement. I believe that the paper you're referring to was using a model, was doing what we said before, increasing the concentration of CO2 and then observing the changes in the marine stratocumulus clouds. And then, you know, the tipping does not happen in a year. I mean, the marine stratocumulus decks decrease slowly until they reach a point where they they're pretty much very small or negligent in terms of the radiative effects.
And as we wrap up, are you confident that your group's cloud findings finally answer the mystery of increasing imbalance of Earth energy?
They just add another component. I think we have some components that we're looking at. We have the aerosols, for example. We have volcanic eruptions. We have some components that we're looking at which did not seem to be sufficient to cover the magnitude of the change, and I believe that this change in the dynamics that we're suggesting is adding another component that gets us closer to the answer.
From the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies, we've been speaking with senior research scientist George Seliotis, and you can find links to all the science we just talked about in my show blog, published every Wednesday at ecoshock.org. George, thank you for your work and for spending time with us.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.